listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Philadelphia Law Offices of Obermeyer. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Drew Hanlon, Shannon Lane, Newmark Knight Frank, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, David DeStefano, Exude, Tammy Frattis, Phoenician Ventures, and Victoria Cohen. And, Peter, can you please give us a rundown of who we have on the air today?
Sure can, Herb. It's with Dominique Bernardo, CEO of Variety, the Children's Charity of the Delaware Valley, Bryant Green, owner, Always Best Care, Benjamin Reuter, CEO of B Positive Plasma, and Stephen Field, President, Synergy Hospitality.
Excellent. Let's get to know our first guest, Dominique Bernardo, CEO of Variety. Dominique, what is Variety, the Children's Charity of the Delaware Valley? What are you guys doing?
Variety is a nonprofit that works with children and young adults with disabilities to ultimately foster independence in them.
Ooh, how large or how small is this organization?
About 20 people full-time, and we have several hundred volunteers annually.
Wow. And where are you from originally?
I'm from Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
I am the middle of 8 children.
What was the effect of you growing up the middle of 8 kids?
I think I often learned to be a peacemaker, be behind the scenes, not always have to be the center of attention, because quite often I was not. Mm-hmm. Learned to fold laundry and set the table. Didn't necessarily learn to cook, because we all had our division of duties.
So you learned about how to play on the team, and you learned about your role on the team, and sometimes what you did better than everybody else, and stuff that other people did better. Is that true?
Yes, I definitely did well academically, was able to have some leadership roles both through grade school, high school, college. So, yeah, uh-huh. we all were different. Uh-huh. Everybody was different.
Peter?
Dominique, how young were you when you realized that service was in your blood?
I think I had good role models in my parents who volunteered often at the church and in different community groups with all of my siblings. So I would say really from grade school on, and then I, mm-hmm. as a result, was involved in a lot of volunteer work through mm-hmm. grade school, high school, and college, and took that into my career.
Dominique, who was someone you looked up to as a kid?
So I would say my mom for sure, with a sense of patience and just doing and raising the family without a complaint and being selfless. But recently my dad passed away, and I realized as a result of that experience and the eulogizing with my brothers and I realized how much like him I am and how really he had this influence on me as far as his skill set and his personality.
And what do you take from dad with you to work every day?
Get the job done, show up on time. Showing up 10 minutes early is showing up late.
How long did Dad have his job?
He was at GE for 31 years.
How long were you at your previous gig?
I was there for 18 years.
You got your dad right in. You got the longevity thing
yes.
going on, don't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Drew.
Dominique, can you take us back to Norristown when you were 10 years old and tell us a little bit about what life was like then?
Yeah, I mean, my memory is mostly with my siblings and my neighborhood friends, where we would ride bikes till the streetlights came on. We would listen to Phillies game on the radio and play Risk in the back patio. It was a really happy childhood.
And what do you take from those days back in Norristown to work with you every day?
I would say definitely it's important to be around people that you like, and also that, you know, life is too short to show up every day for a job that you don't enjoy being at. There's a sense of joy where I work, and that is really important to me. Mm-hmm. I would also, you know.
And how about the impact that Variety is right in the backyard of where you grew up at?
That's been particularly meaningful because prior to this, I had not worked locally. And so the reconnections I'm making with folks from childhood and the church and schools has been wonderful in the sense that there's these amazing connections and being able to apply them in a professional network is something that has been newer to me, but much mm-hmm. Very rewarding.
Mr. DeStefano.
Tell us, growing up as a middle child of a large family, very structured. How's that influenced your leadership style today?
Yes. So I am a rule follower. My parents were rather strict, particularly more so on the girls than the boys. And I would say, you know, I like order and I like procedures and I like planning and I like knowing what's happening. And that definitely reflects in my leadership style as far as, you know, implementing systems and procedures, which are very necessary. Oftentimes in smaller organizations, particularly in the nonprofit industry, where sometimes things could be loosey, you know, more loosey-goosey, very generally speaking.
So after a long career with your prior organization and hearing your dad 31 years, why make the jump now to be a number one position, a CEO?
Yeah. I had the opportunity at my prior organization to take on many different leadership roles, and it was always a challenge. And that's what kept me there, aside from being committed to the mission. But towards the end of my tenure there, when I was serving as the CFO, I had the opportunity to step in as an interim CEO for about 7 months. And as that experience unfolded, I realized how much I loved aspects of the CEO position, the networking with external partners, the fundraising, which was a pleasant surprise to learn I enjoyed that, the managing of the board. There was a joy as I managed that stressful time, which I think it's called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, when it comes out and you sort of thrive on that. And I thought, I can do this. And mm-hmm. that's when I decided it was time to try to find my own place to run and drive the bus.
Tammy?
Dominic, when you were growing up, was one of your siblings disabled?
Yes, my oldest brother, Frankie, was born with cerebral palsy.
And how did that drive what you're doing now?
So when this opportunity arose, I felt connected to the mission as a result of my brother Frankie. He did not live at home with us after he was about 7 years old. So I was very young when he moved to a residential placement. And the resources that my organization is able to provide are particularly meaningful to me, given that he wasn't a part of my life on a daily basis. And I also saw peers making fun of him at times because they didn't understand his disability. So that has driven me for more awareness in this field.
You've mentioned church a few times. Did religion play a big part in your life?
Yes, it did. We would go to church every Sunday as a family. We would all line up in the front row. With the girls would have their hats, the boys would have their ties. We were lined up like little ducklings. But yes, we continued to practice my faith throughout. So it was definitely an influence as far as structure and order.
Yeah, Matthew?
Dominique, you said you learned service volunteering with your parents. So did you grow up always wanting to work in and run nonprofits?
I did not. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And when it was time to go to college, my dad said, you're going to major in business because you're going to get a job. And so I graduated with an accounting degree and took a job with the public accounting firm because that's what you did. And I started, I was placed at one point on a nonprofit audit. And I remember looking up at the mission on the wall and thinking, I love this. Like, I love what this says. I love being in a place that is driven by that. And so I started asking for more assignments with nonprofits. So I audited a host of different nonprofits. And as a result of that experience, decided to go back to school for a degree in social work and, get more of the creds behind my name, and haven't looked back since then.
And so now that you're working at a nonprofit, and particularly at Variety, do you get to interact with the kids that Variety's helping?
I do. I mean, I could step out of my office at any point or visit any of the programs, and I get to meet with them, see what they're doing. I do particularly love meeting with parents. I've been doing a listening tour since I started to say, what do you like about the organization? What would you want to change? What do we mean to you? And I think that listening piece is so important for me to continue beyond my newer tenure, but ongoing.
Wait. You're doing a listening tour? Who came up with that idea, and why are you spending time on doing that? You're the boss. Just tell people what to do.
Well, it was something I had seen done in my prior organization. I had gone through a few changes in leadership at the CEO level. And so I spent time interviewing every full-time staff person when I first came on board. I've continued to meet with parents, both prior parents and new parents. I'm meeting individually with each board member. And I think it's really, you know, it's self-awareness, I guess I would say, is my biggest value as a leader, the thing that I think is most important for leaders.
What do you think's your greatest value, your greatest attribute?
I think self-awareness.
What is self-awareness?
I think it's it's the greatest quality a leader needs to have. So I'm not saying I'm the best at it, but it's something
what?
I work on.
Is what?
It's being self-aware.
What is self-awareness?
I think that is being able to put yourselves in the shoes of the other person, of the client, of your funder.
What are you talking about? The boss is the boss. I read the newspapers.
Right. I don't think someone can be successful in any position without self-awareness, but particularly as a leader, if there is not empathy, if there is not understanding, if there is not an awareness of what's happening, then you can be driving blind, and it will not succeed.
So you're telling me that you want input from everybody around you in order to keep feeling and sensing where the organization needs to go and what needs to get done?
Yes, not for every decision and not every day, but yes, check-ins and understanding where we are. And I think it's taking a pulse, right? Being able to take a pulse at appropriate times and ongoing to be sure that, you know, my team is happy, that our constituents are happy, that the programs we're delivering are making a difference. So, yes, I think
all
that's
right.
very important.
I just wanted
important.
To make sure I understood. What's the website address of Variety, the Children's Club of the Delaware Valley?
It's varietyphila.org.
Let me have that one more time.
Varietyphila.org.
You've been speaking with Dominique Bernardo, CEO of Variety, the Children's Charity of the Delaware Valley. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. And your name is in the name of your radio show.
My name is Brian Green, and I'm the host of the Did You Know Show. It airs on Saturdays at 4 p.m. on WRDRadio.com or 96.1 FM, 900 AM. You can check me out at 4 p.m. on Saturdays on 900 AM on 96.1
FM. And what's the show all about?
The Did You Know Show is centered around connecting people to home, business, and community resources that you ordinarily wouldn't know about.
Why do you bother doing that?
To connect the community. I do a lot of work in the community. The community feeds me, and back I like to feed them with knowledge.
What's the website address of this again?
The radio show is WURDRadio.com.
And how long have you been doing this?
6 years.
How much longer are you planning to do it?
As long as God gives me a voice.
So you really enjoy connecting the community to resources, don't you?
It gives me the juice.
Does it really?
It does.
Wow. Okay, give me the website address one more time again.
The website address is WURDRadio.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can check me out on 96.1 FM or 900 AM, 4 p.m. on Saturdays.
This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name and the name of the TV show.
Hi, my name is Brian Green, and I have a TV show called The Did You Know Show.
What?
It airs on Channel 4 on Comcast and Verizon on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and on Channel 7 and 190 in Delaware. You can check me out.
What's the show all about?
The show is centered around connecting people to home, community, and business resources that you ordinarily wouldn't know about.
Like what? What are you talking about?
We talk about Alzheimer's. We talk about human trafficking, reentry programs, lupus, educational triumphs and losses.
So this is of interest to you?
It's interest to me. Most times my clients and my caregivers and my colleagues.
Huh. And how long have you been doing this for?
2 years.
And how much longer are you planning to do it?
As long as God gives me the voice.
All right. How can we tune into this TV show?
You can check me out on Channel 4 on Verizon and Comcast at 7 a.m. on Saturday and Sundays.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Bryant Green, owner of Always Best Care. Bryant, what is Always Best Care and how large or small is the organization?
Always Best Care Senior Services is a home care agency. We provide in-home care primarily to seniors, but we also support people that have had a hip or knee replacement, a back injury, if you're recovering from a stroke or battling cancer. My organization is about 1,300 to 1,500 people. We have about 500 full-time employees.
Uh-huh. Drew?
Yeah, Brian, I'm just curious. You met a gentleman named Dan at a career fair that kind of pivoted your career. Can you tell us a little about that chance encounter?
Sure. Dan Centerbaum was a franchise broker at the time, and he introduced me to my entrepreneurial spirit and also to Always Best Care. And through his connection, I started a franchise up in Bucks County.
And what did he see in you when you first met?
He liked my resume. He liked my energy. He thought that I could be a leader. And at the time, he probably thought more of me being an entrepreneur than I did.
So you're at a career fair looking for a job, and you suddenly determined you had the skill set to just start a company. What gave you that sense of survival?
Really, I had just given up on working in a regular corporate environment. I felt at the time it was the end of the Bush era and the beginning of the Obama era. It was a very tough time in terms of economy, and no jobs really seemed to be hiring. So.
Yeah, but the whole point is, if nobody's hiring, then what gives you the sense you're going to go start a business? Isn't that crazier?
It was crazy, but fearless. I had nothing else, and I had to survive.
But what in your childhood led you to know that you were a survivor?
Well, I spent a lot of time alone, and then I had a chance to work. You know, I've been working since I was 5 years old. The benefit of having a grandfather that owns a business, and then also a mother that worked 2.5 jobs all the time. I really, you know, either dreamed or worked.
True.
Yeah, you just mentioned that you dreamed a lot as a youth. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. In my head, I dreamed a lot because I had a lot of time alone or with my grandparents. And so my grandmother's always told interesting stories of old, and their peer group told stories. So it allowed me to dream. And since my father was absentee father, I also dreamed about being a family man oftentimes and having a family.
And were you able to make that dream come true?
I was. I have a daughter, and you know, she works for me now, and we spend a lot of time together.
Matthew?
You told us before that you grew up in a multi-generational family, right? Who was around when you were growing up?
Wow. When I was growing up, since my mother started young, I had both sets of grandparents and both great-grandmothers.
And out of all of those people, your mother and grandparents and great-grandparents, who had the most influence on you?
Both grandmothers and my mother. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with my grandmothers prepping and cooking. And I watched my mom work a lot, and oftentimes she would take me to work sometimes back then.
Why were you smiling when you mentioned your grandmothers and great-grandmother? What was going on? Well, you're smiling again. Why?
Because they just were very spirited individuals differently. One grandmother actually worked in a homeless shelter for a good part of my life. Another grandmother fed folks in her church every Thursday.
Uh-huh.
But when I thought about their spirit, I get warm because they really were fun people. And they didn't take no tea for the fever.
So is it more than a coincidence that you're in this business now, having been influenced so significantly by seniors as a child?
It's cosmic. When I think about my upbringing around a lot of seniors and now dealing with seniors, I think I'm a lot more comfortable when the senior is, you know, more cranky or verbose. One thing good about seniors, rather than any other, I think, generation, is that you know where you are. They're the most transparent part of our world, in my opinion. They let you have it when you need to have it.
Okay, keep on going. What else are you thinking?
I think that, you know, we meet people where they are. I serve the underserved population, both from a client perspective, and a lot of my employees are just below the poverty line. So we spend a lot of time in the community. I was able to really be successful because I took a lot of the cases that a lot of my competitors would not take.
Why would you do that?
Well, one, to bring a name for myself and to bring a competitive edge, and then two, I have no problem meeting people where they are because I come from a very, very modest background.
Victoria?
Do you have any hobbies?
I do. I'm a hobby farmer. On my farm, I have rescued horses, donkeys, ponies. We have alpacas, sheep, and goats.
Wait. So for your full-time career, you're taking care of people. You're all about, let me take care of you, let me take care of you. And you're telling me your hobby is taking care of animals, too?
Every morning I go out and talk to at least two or three of my horses, and I'm talking to – I have animal caregivers to help me. So oftentimes I don't muck as much as I used to, but I do go out and talk to animals and sometimes yell and scream and every now and again shed a tear.
Wait a second. So you're talking to these animals?
And they understand me. They get me. They don't judge me.
And you're running a business of how many people?
We have, on any given day, probably about anywhere from 1,300 to 1,500 people on the street.
So what's the common thread between your communicating with animals and people? What's going on here?
Well, animals give me a sense of balance. Oftentimes, you know, since we're taking care of them, we're bringing them out of a situation that they've come that was really hard. With people, you know, sometimes people need help, and sometimes people feel forgotten or neglected, and sometimes people that are responsible for them also feel kind of resentful or burdened. So we try to bring a calm to people's new normal when they're taking care of somebody they didn't intend to take care of.
You're a master in psychology. Shannon, what are you picking up?
Brian, earlier you said that you always dreamed of having a family and being a father, and now you have a daughter. What does family mean to you today?
Family is very important, and really family just doesn't include my biological family. It includes the village. Oftentimes, you know, we find ourselves really helping and nurturing each other. I grew up from, you know, a community that it takes a village. And I'm very comfortable in the community, very comfortable helping people. My daughter works for me, I think sometimes begrudgingly. I try not to be as hard on her as my grandfather was on me, but she would argue that I'm just as hard.
Peter? Speaking of telling it like it is, tell us about your grandfather. How did he treat you?
My grandfather was tough on me. He had me on the, he took dominion over me when my father was absentee father. I didn't get close to my father until just before he passed away. But anyway, my grandfather was tough. I grew up on a job that if you had your hands in your pocket, he went upside your head. He was unapologetically tough. He didn't spare your feelings. There was nowhere for you to get, into your feelings. He was very direct, very, not cautious at all. He showed me everything that I shouldn't do in today's management.
Your dad mentioned, you mentioned your dad left when you were about how old?
My father was absentee until I was about 17.
How do you think that affected you?
It affected me in a lot of different ways. It's really interesting. When I see a lot of my friends or just people in general interacting with their kids, I realize how much I missed as a kid. And I often think about how further along I would have been if I had my paternal influence in my life.
Tell me more.
My father died incarcerated. So if anything, he led me by example what not to do. I had the undoubtable pleasure or displeasure of meeting him from behind bars, but it taught me a lesson about his failures, but also, you know, turning that lemon into a lemonade. And through me, just really seeking a different path to make important decisions.
Okay, keep going.
That's really what I do now. I talk to people. I don't judge people. I meet people where they are. I do a lot of help for people that have had some bumps and bruises along the way, particularly young people that have made wrong decisions or even gotten incarcerated for whatever reason. So it makes me very comfortable to talk to them.
What drives you? I want to be like you. What drives you?
Just really happiness. I think, you know, as your earlier guest said,
what makes you happy? What makes you happy?
What makes me happy is balance. I'm a giver.
How could you have balance? You got, you know, 1,500 people working. You got a horse. You got an animal farm you're doing.
I have a lot of help. And it's never a dull moment. You know, we don't turn anything down but our collar.
You trust people?
Sometimes.
What do you mean? Tell me more.
Sometimes I trust people that show themselves. I pay attention to people, how they show themselves. If they show you who they are, they are. But I don't.
That's one of your strengths, because you're meeting people where they are. You really understand who people are.
Right.
You know where people fit naturally, don't you?
I try to read a room.
What do you mean you try to read a room?
I try to read a room. I try to see who's the introvert, the extrovert, who's the doer, who's the thinker, who's the person that's...
No wonder you've been so successful and you're tuning into these animals and these people. You just naturally understand who they are, don't you?
I try to.
Wow. And then therefore you've been able to figure out where people fit and who you can trust, who can do what, who can... Then occasionally you get disappointed, but you know how to handle that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Wow. What's the website of your organization?
TeamGreenABC.com.
Let me have that one more time. Oh, what was the name of your... What was it again?
TeamGreenABC.com.
TeamGreenABC.com. We've been speaking with Brian Green, owner of Always Best Care. We will be back in a moment after this break. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. And your name is?
Hank Boyer, Boyer Management Group.
And Hank, I hear that half the workforce is looking for a new job nowadays. What's going on there?
Well, there's a couple of things. The economy's booming right now, and there's been, for the last 10 years, a pent-up desire to change jobs. So that's now coming about because the economy's booming. And employers are very aggressive in poaching talent from other companies.
Hmm. So what's that mean for employers, the fact that the economy's booming and that some folks have a pent-up desire to change jobs and, you know, employers are poaching other employers' talent? What that mean?
Well, there's going to be a massive disruption here. And the first part that is going to be felt is the service levels to customers. You're losing people that are experienced, and now you're replacing them with people that don't have the experience. But then there's a huge cost to replace the talent that you lose. When you lose somebody that's even halfway decent, it's going to cost 25 to 40% of the first year's compensation just to pay for that. And that's going to precipitate a lot of pressure to fill positions, and that means bad hires, which is also a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what can employers do?
Well, three things, I think. First of all, employers have to assess their risks, figure out why the talent is leaving, and it's going to be different for different organizations. They've got to implement retention programs, and that probably means retraining managers on how to do those things. And they're going to have to revise their hiring practices so that they're attracting the right people, they're getting them on board, and they're taking care of them.
So give me a quick recap of all that again.
Well, the economy is just opening up a lot of movement within the workforce today, and that's going to have some pretty bad things happen to businesses if they don't take action right now to make sure that they're not being adversely affected.
What's the website address for your organization?
BoyerManagement.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Boyer Management, B-O-Y-E-R Management.com.
And we've been speaking with Hank Boyer, Boyer Management, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Ben Reuter, CEO of B Positive Plasma. Ben, what is B Positive Plasma? What are you guys doing?
We are a source plasma manufacturer. We collect blood plasma from donors at our two locations, seeing about 6,000 people a week. And we then distribute that to other pharma companies to create vaccines.
Gotcha. How large or how small is this team?
Around 200 employees.
So how'd you get a job with this company?
I started the company around 9 years ago.
Uh-huh. And where are you from originally?
Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
And how many brothers and sisters?
Two younger siblings.
So you're the oldest of three. Mm-hmm. All right. Drew.
Ben, how young were you when you started making money?
I was around 8 years old, I would say.
And what were you doing?
I started selling GIMP bracelets to my friend in school. That was the big thing.
And why did you do that?
I just found it fun. I liked doing the activity, and I liked the selling to the peers and, you know, making a quarter for every bracelet you sold.
And you joked in the green room that if eating was a sport, you would have been good at it. Did you have an eating issue at a young age?
I would just say I like to eat, you know.
How did that impact you?
Well, physically, obviously, you gain a bit of weight. But emotionally speaking, you know, it has some a trauma on your social ability.
And did those eating habits leak over to any other health issues? Or?
Yeah, I definitely had some skin-related conditions as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of skin-related conditions? What are you talking about?
Cyst related.
Uh-huh. What'd you learn from your cyst health related issues that has anything to do with growing a business?
Or that you gotta really take every day for granted and you know, go out there and
Peter?
Ben, you have a very calm and kind of joyful attitude. Your business is called Be Positive Plasma. Tell us where all that attitude comes from.
Oh, sure. Well, you need to be incredibly patient with people when running a business, especially a manufacturing one where, you know, minor mistakes such as spelling errors can lead to citations in the regulatory world. So creating a positive atmosphere in the business world is really critical.
Mm-hmm. David?
You mentioned in your youth that being, you know, a heavyset kid brought a lot of trauma from your peers. How has that influenced your leadership style today?
Sure. Well, learning to, you know, be your own self and not really let other people tell you what sort of disheartened you has had a really big impact on the business, including, you know, how it got started.
What do you mean?
You know, just having the starting this business, you know, telling people that you're going to be sticking needles in people's arms and collecting blood and then selling that, but you can't actually sell for a few years until you're regulatory approved, which may not even happen. It was a really tough sell, and, you know, had to go out there and, you know, pitch.
So how did some of the childhood stuff you went through with the skin issues as well as the overweight with kids teasing you, how did that prepare you to start this business?
Gives you thick skin, you know. You can take a no as an answer and learn from it and move on.
Mm-hmm. How about as it relates to your employees? Does it allow you to embrace diversity more effectively?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, especially in this day and age, I think having a diverse field of people working for you with different backgrounds is critical to running a business.
Ben, can you tell us a little bit about your mom and what she was like?
Sure. My mom is a physical therapist by trade, but when she had kids, she decided to, you know, be a stay-at-home mom and really watch over the three of us who were not the most pleasant of children.
And what about her personality traits?
She's very caring. You know, definitely family was the number one thing that was instilled in the importance of family and being there for each other.
And what did you learn from mom that you bring with you to work every day?
Being patient and being patient with people and really caring for people and listening to people's opinions, especially in areas that you are not the best at, is critical to running a business.
You told us before you were named for your mother's father, right?
Yes.
Tell us about him.
So my grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. Survived Auschwitz, moved to Vineland, New Jersey after the war, and started a family on a chicken farm.
And tell me how that impacted you growing up.
Sure. You know, there was always discussions about my grandfather at all major family events. You know, his story really helped inspire you to really make the most of life.
Do you bring that to your business now?
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
I think a lot of people really respect when leaders can be a bit hands-on, and I don't take any day for granted, and if there's something that needs help with, I'm there to roll up my sleeves and get the job done.
You mentioned that one of the ways your grandfather impacted you, by the way, where'd you get your name from?
From my grandfather.
Another way that he impacted you, aside from your name, is that he helped you bring the most to life or something. What was that all about?
Basically, you know, when you live through a horror like that experience was, you can't let any day be for granted, and sort of instilling that in us has been a really big part of growing up.
Well, how does that show up for you every day?
Well, you know, going out there and growing a business is definitely, you know, what I do to sort of honor that memory.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
The daily grind is quite a brutal one. 12-hour days plus every day for many years. But, you know, you sort of put in what you need to ensure that the business runs smoothly.
But you're running a 200-person. You could financially retire if you wanted to. Why don't you?
Oh, I absolutely love what I do.
What are you talking about? You said it's a daily grind. It's tough. It's 12 hours a day, and you could retire, but you don't want to? What? Give me that again.
Yeah. No, I know. It sounds crazy. But I really do enjoy what I'm doing. We really helping the
How do you
community.
Think your grandfather would feel if he knew what you were doing?
I think he would be very happy with
Why?
How things are. I mean, we've not only, you know...
Not we've, I. I what?
I think that he would really like the fact that we're a big part of the community. We're really helping the community by not only compensating our donors and injecting a significant amount of cash flow into the community that we're in, mm-hmm. But also helping save patients' lives mm-hmm. through the medications.
Victoria?
What role did you play among your two younger siblings?
I was the older brother, probably the more patient one of the family.
And Tammy?
So you went from hemp bracelets to blood plasma. Connect that. Did someone have health problems when you were growing up or expose you to the hospital a lot?
Mm-hmm. So I did have a grandmother who needed whole blood back in the day. So I became the overall chairperson of my blood drive in high school. That transitioned to starting a group at college and then transforming that into the business today. And actually just recently my other grandmother has needed plasma products, so it's come full circle.
So you've been saving people's lives, not only in the community, but also your own family members.
Yes, I would, not necessarily directly, but yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, the plasma products have helped save many people's lives. I'm just saying my blood did not go to help my...
Yeah, but you're not taking all the credit you deserve. Was this grandmother the grandfather that was in Germany?
Yes, that was the blood originally.
Uh-huh. So your grandmother and grandfather really did have a major influence, both of them, on you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the best part of your day?
The best part of my day, I would say, is the morning, where I get to really plan things out and before people come to work and have a great idea of how
my day is. What time of the morning is that?
Between 5 and 7.
So you could retire. You don't want to. How old are you?
I'm 35.
You're 35. You could retire. You don't want to. And you're working at 5 to 7 in the morning planning for everybody for the day. Okay, that makes sense. What's the website address of this thing?
BePositiveToday.com.
Let me have that again.
BePositiveToday.com.
And your name again is?
Ben Ritter.
And you're CEO of this organization.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Give me that website one more time.
Sure. BePositiveToday.com.
All right. Just wanted to make sure. This is Herb Cohen. We'll be talking to Ben Ritter, CEO of Be Positive Plasma. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. I'd like to introduce Dr. Joyce Russell, who is the dean of the Villanova School of Business. And I understand that the Villanova School of Business recently received some very special recognition. What's that all about?
That's right. We were ranked number one for undergraduate business school in the nation, as well as in the top 10 for our graduate programs, our online programs, and our part-time programs.
You're ranked number one. What's it take to do that? What's it take to achieve the number one ranking?
I think you have to have really strong faculty. We recruit great students, and we have really good outcomes, so that over 99% of our students get jobs within 6 months. They have great salaries. They have great signing bonuses, and so the outcomes are really important.
What do you like about your job? I mean, what's it like to be a dean? What do you enjoy about what you're doing?
Well, I absolutely love Villanova School of Business because this is a mission-based school. So our view is that we are not just another business school. We're a business school that has purpose, and our purpose is building business leaders for a better world. So whatever we can do to have them not only have really strong academic skills and professional skills, but to make a difference in the world today.
Do any of your previous student graduates ever come back to the school?
Absolutely. We have some here today who have been talking about some of the successes they've had. We have a lot of CEOs from the School of Business who have gone on to show that not only can they build a very successful business, whether it's in finance or accounting, marketing, et cetera, but that they can actually have an impact in terms of the world and making it a better place.
Wow. So you have students that have graduated that are CEOs of businesses that come back and help influence the kids and really make a difference, not just in terms of building a business, but purpose. What's the website address of the Villanova School of Business?
It's business.villanova.edu.
Let me have that one more time.
Business.villanova.edu.
And we've been speaking with Dean Russell, Villanova School of Business. Hey, And your name is?
Nella Bloom.
And the name of the organization?
Women Owned Law.
And what is this organization, Women Owned Law? What makes this organization special?
It's a new professional association that's focused on women legal entrepreneurs. These are women who have launched or lead law firms and other legal services firms.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit more about where this idea came from.
Well, there is a lot of demand for an organization like this. There was a soft launch in October, and after, and just by word of mouth, we're not only launching in Philadelphia, where the majority of the members now are, but also in New York and Washington, D.C.
Whose idea was this?
This was the idea of a few women lawyers, specifically Nicole Galli and Gabrielle Soleil, each of whom own their own practices.
And they why would they form something like this?
There is a lot of demand for something like this.
Why would there be a lot of demand?
Because there are a lot of women who own their own law firms and either are solo practitioners or have smaller practices or have an ownership interest in a larger practice, but really are directing the goals of the practice overall.
So these women, this gives them a chance to hang out and talk with each other and compare notes?
Well, it is, but we also are going to be doing a lot of programming focusing not only on how to start a business, how to run a small business, and the issues that are specific to law firms. But also, we want to be the go-to source for media, for academics, and industry people who want to understand the growing sector of women-owned law firms.
What's the website address of this organization?
It is womenownedlaw.org.
Let me have that one more time.
Womenownedlaw.org.
And your name is?
Nella Bloom.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, or truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. To hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. Mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Stephen Field, president of Synergy Hospitality. Stephen, what is Synergy Hospitality? What are you guys doing?
Herb, Synergy Hospitality is a regional hospitality management company. We manage hotels both owned and for third-party owners.
And how large or how small is this organization?
We have about 20 people that work directly for Synergy and a couple hundred that work at the various hotel properties we manage.
All righty. And where are you from originally?
Born and raised in Philly. Lived on Rittenhouse Square until I was 6 or 7 years old, and then moved into the suburbs, various locations, Jeffersonville and Villanova.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister and a younger half-brother.
All right, Drew.
Stephen, when you were 7, you had a life-changing event. Can you tell our listening audience what happened?
Yeah, Drew, my mother passed away just before I turned 7. She had been ill for some time.
And how did that impact you as a youth?
It was very difficult. I mean, I think, losing a mother who's very involved, as a young boy is traumatic. And I think my father, after that, obviously had his own set of trauma that, he tried to compensate for. So he was generally fairly absent for a period of time before he remarried.
And it sounded like one of the ways you distracted yourself from that tough time is to play baseball.
Loved baseball. Was always a big Phillies fan. Loved watching, listening to the Phillies games on the air. It was always wanted to play baseball.
And what was your role on the team?
I played wherever I had to play, wherever I could play, but mostly second base and also pitched.
And how did the experience being a team player help you lead today?
I love being part of a team. I love contributing. I love celebrating when we win. And I'm a fairly competitive guy, so that was always natural for me.
Stephen, what did you learn from Mom that you keep with you today?
My mother was a very compassionate, empathetic, caring, loving person, and I'd like to think that I have some of that in terms of the way I manage the relationships in my life.
And how exactly do you see that come out at Synergy Hospitality?
Well, we're very relationship and values oriented organization. We really try to we work very closely together. We have a strong team, and we enjoy working together. I like surrounding myself with people who are smart, energetic, and passionate about what they do. And we all enjoy trying to do things the right way, and positive outcomes that come from that.
David.
Where did you go for emotional support and guidance when your mom passed?
I had an aunt and uncle who were local and very involved in my life. Spent a lot of time with them. I also had a wonderful Trinidadian housekeeper who lived with us and was very supportive and empathetic.
So connect the dots between the team approach that you talk about in your business today and the sort of absence of that in your critical child years.
I think I like to surround myself with people who are empathetic and prioritize positive relationships. And
resilience in there somewhere.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some degree of resilience, David. I think largely, we like to establish relationships rather than operate a business in a really transactional fashion.
Stephen, what was it like as a little kid watching your dad go through losing his wife?
I don't know as a child that I was really all that sensitive to what my father was going through. I was really most sensitive to the fact that he just wasn't present at the time. But as I got older, I realized that has to be a difficult thing as an adult to go through. And I think, if anything, just made me more aware of the way I parent my own children.
So how do you parent your own children?
Well, I try to be more involved than my father was, at least during that stage of my life. It's not always easy with the distractions of running a company and whatnot. But I try to take an interest in my children's life and try to communicate with them often as I can.
You've kind of described changing your view of what your father was going through. How does that impact what you do today? Watching the understanding you've come to his path.
Well, I think that's true for anyone, right? I mean, we all have a certain perception of people that we form. I think one of the most powerful things that we can do in managing relationships is sort of respect what other people's situations are and the paradigm that they have.
So how do you use that with the people who work with you today?
I think it's really important that we try to understand. I mean, I have a lot of people who work in the hospitality industry that are working, for an hourly wage, sub-management level people. And I think, one of the aspects of running a successful hospitality or customer service business is understanding what those people have to go through every day to get to work and what they do, on the job, and really have some compassion and understanding for how difficult it is to, bring a positive attitude to work every day. But, those are the kind of people that we love having around us because they really are passionate about what they do and creating great, great customer experiences.
Stephen, back to childhood. Tell us about your first experience making money. What were you doing?
As a boy, I sold used books on Spruce Street.
in By Center yourself?
City. I had a friend whose mother was a voracious reader and had boxes and boxes of books that she had read in her basement, and she had no use for, but couldn't bring herself to throw them out. So we used to set up tables and try to sell used books on the street.
Was that your first team?
I think that was my first team. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Victoria?
You mentioned that your father remarried just 3 years after losing your mother. How did that affect you?
I think in a lot of ways I had to become pretty self-sufficient. I think that my father and his second wife were very much into a lifestyle, and I became very self-sufficient because of sort of a lack of family involvement at the time.
You also mentioned earlier that some of the values, some of the material values that you saw them adopt isn't necessarily who you are, which sort of surprised me because you're running this substantial, successful business, and I thought the reason you were doing it was to buy fancy cars and homes and stuff like that.
I think those are byproducts of success, but to me, success is really about building successful teams and delivering great experiences, not just for our ultimate client who's paying to stay at hotels, but for the people who come to work every day who work for us, and we consider those really our first clients, because if we're not doing a good job making their experience positive, there's no way they're going to be able to make our hotel guests stay positive.
So you think there's a connection between young Stephen, whose father was grieving and working, and whose mother was sick and then dying and not really having anyone to relate to, and you now find yourself in a business that's all about serving other people, having relationships, and creating the ultimate client experience for your customers?
I'm sure there is, absolutely. I think, I strive to replace what might have been lacking in my childhood through what I do every day.
How is that, Stephen? Tell us more about that.
Well, we were a very tight-knit group at work. We really work closely together, and I think we enjoy not just working together and the product of our work, but we try to socialize together with some frequency, and we try to have fun at work and enjoy the victories that we have. I've spent a lot of time working, so you better enjoy what you're doing.
Wait. You try to socialize frequently with other people at work?
We try to get together and do a happy hour.
I don't read about that in the newspapers. All I hear is rotten stuff about the CEO and the management team and firing people and abusing the employees. And it doesn't sound like the way you're running your business, though.
It's not. I don't think that is a viable, successful sustainable way to run a company. I think if people don't enjoy who they work with and what they do and don't feel respected and appreciated and challenged every day, then they're looking for a new boss.
And this sort of turns you on. I mean, earlier you were talking about, the materialism is not necessarily what you respect. It's really the building of the team, and it's creating win-win-wins, isn't it?
That's exactly right. That's exactly
what
right.
is
what the win-win. I mean, I'm a big Covey geek, so I trying to create win-wins is an important part of what we do every day.
And the win-win is between who and who and who? Tell me about that.
Well, I think the win-win is between our company, our company team, our guests, our vendors, our lenders, our investors. I mean, we really try to create a situation where everybody involved in our individual business enterprises feels as though it's a valuable relationship.
Where everybody feels it's a valuable relationship. It's not just a transaction, it's a relationship.
It's an experience, Herb. It's not a transaction. That's, we're in the hotel business. We sell hotel rooms, and a lot of people in our industry consider a hotel room a commodity. We really try to create experiences, because otherwise we would have nothing to compete on other than price.
What's the website address of your organization?
Our company website is synergyhotels.com.
Let me have that one more time.
That's Synergy with an S, synergyhotels.com.
We've been speaking with Stephen Field, president of Synergy Hospitality. Peter, can you give us a rundown? Who else we had the opportunity
sure
to speak
can, to? Herb. We had Dominique Bernardo, CEO of Variety, the children's charity of the Delaware Valley, Bryant Green, owner Always Best Care, Benjamin Reuter, CEO of B Positive Plasma, and just now, Stephen Field, President, Synergy Hospitality.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, including Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Drew Hanlon, Shannon Lane, Newmark Knight, Frank, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, David DeStefano, Exude, Tammy Frattis, Phoenician Ventures, and Victoria Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website. For executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We want to thank you for joining us today. And please do have a nice day. Bye-bye.